Welcome to the Marketing That Generates podcast, hosted by yours truly, Lauren Powell. For over a decade, I've partnered with business owners around the globe to create and implement their digital marketing strategy. Working together with their teams, we generate more leads, more customers, and more revenue. I'm here to make your business growth simpler by making online marketing simpler. Every week, I'll be interviewing other business owners about the strategies that are keeping their marketing relevant in the long term, so they're not hammered by monthly algorithm adjustments. So are you ready to generate more leads, better leads, and more sales-ready leads online while making the most of your oh-so-valuable time? Then this is the podcast for you. Are you tired of being promised the magic pill that's going to solve all your online marketing challenges? Well, this podcast does not promise quick overnight fixes, nor a one-size-fits-all marketing formula. Instead, it will empower you to think differently and more strategically about your marketing so that you get better results. So whether you're a business owner, solopreneur, or an aspiring entrepreneur, listen in and subscribe for zero fluff and actionable takeaways. And for bonus resources, go to marketingthatgenerates.com. In our current podcast series, I interview the owners of four very different web development businesses, and we dive deep into their marketing. Today's episode is the first of that series, and I interview Allison Monday of Tiny Blue Orange, based in Michigan. Allison sits at the intersection of design and development, and in my opinion, is a unicorn web developer. I should know because I've worked with many over the past decade, and I've worked with Allison on many client projects. In this episode, Allison details her WordPress development services, what makes for a successful website project, and walks you through her systematic and strategic marketing process that has fueled her business the last 10 years. Don't forget to visit the show notes to get all the links for this episode. Allison, I am so excited to have you here today.
Oh, Lauren, I think it's my honor to be here. Thank you so much for, you know, calling me into this.
Yeah. So you've built this awesome business, coding WordPress websites for small businesses. So I'd love to, for any listener who isn't maybe familiar with WordPress, I'd love you to share what WordPress is and why you've chosen to focus on that specific website platform, because I think it's a really important distinction about your business.
Yeah, definitely. So WordPress, I'm going to get nerdy, right? I have to. That's my brand. WordPress is open source. So that's geek speak for it is free to use on the internet. Now, there might be some folks who are listening who think, wait a minute. I pay for this. Yes. You have to pay to have a website in existence, but WordPress itself, which is the tool that allows you to build out blog posts or pages or any sort of content that exists on your website, that element itself is free. Whereas a company like Squarespace, they charge you kind of a monthly fee for that hosting and use of Squarespace itself. And no shade there. It's just since I've been doing this for over a decade, WordPress was kind of the gold premier when I started. And so, you know, I've spent that time learning it like the back of my hand. And I just realized when I ventured out into other platforms, I wasn't really doing my clients any favors by being kind of good at other things. So that's why I've stuck with WordPress this whole time.
Yeah. And, you know, not to be biased, but I also consider WordPress a gold standard. That's not to say there's not a place and time for Squarespace or Wix or any of the other hosted services that exist. But in general, if you're a little farther along in business and a website is a big source of traffic for you or business generating traffic, then I think WordPress is a great way to go. But I assume if someone were to reach out to you and say, hey, Allison, I want to build a new website or I want to rework my current website, you would help them understand whether WordPress is the right choice for them or not.
Definitely. And I think you hit the nail on the head. There are situations where some of those other builders, you know, would definitely serve a purpose. However, kind of the caveat that I give to most folks is with Weebly, Wix, and Squarespace, your content is kind of stuck there. Whereas with WordPress, you can take it to a different hosting company. You can kind of carry it with you because of that open source piece of it. So sometimes, and it's very doable, but sometimes that transition from something else to WordPress can be a bit of a headache for folks. So, you know, yeah, no shade, but definitely would recommend WordPress for most businesses.
Yeah, I think
you know, so one piece of advice that I like to give people is if you're just starting out and you're looking to kind of do it on a budget and DIY it and get it up quickly, and you have no tech knowledge, maybe one of those places is a great starting point for you, but eventually you're likely going to have to migrate to WordPress. So just know that's part of your journey.
Exactly.
So I'd love for our listeners to hear a little more about your services and your approach to WordPress design and development.
Yeah. So I like to say that anything that touches WordPress is what I help with. So that can be hosting, so keeping everything safe, secure on the internet, which can be kind of a sketchy place at times. Whether that's updates, plugins, themes, all of that sort of thing. We also help out with that. And then kind of the bigger piece would be building from scratch, modifying a theme to make it feel custom, or taking a site that exists that might be causing some headaches or needs some upgrades or needs a new feature, and doing those kind of phase two, phase three, phase four projects for folks.
Love that. And I will say that with hosting, of course, there's lots of great options, but often if you have an issue, you're left to like a customer support team that maybe is not US located. Maybe it's hard to get great answers out of in a timely manner. And so I think that's one advantage to working with someone like you, where you know the person behind the business, you know they're going to shoot you straight, you know you don't have to run through 25 different people to get a real answer. And I say that with utmost respect for the web hosting industry, but also being someone who has to talk to customer support teams a lot, it can be bring a lot of peace of mind to just know, okay, Allison and Tiny Blue Orange have me covered. I don't have to worry about it. And if there's an issue, I'll just reach out to her.
Exactly. I mean, I could spend this entire podcast going through horror stories, but I don't think people would like to listen to that, right? Of tech support that knows less than you do, or entire sites just being lost and them going, well, sorry, I wish you well. You know, it's just kind of nice to have a little bit more oomph behind the scenes so that you know your site isn't going to disappear, isn't going to crash, and isn't going to kind of be left in the ether while you're trying to do all of the things that go along with running your business.
Yeah, and one thing you are so great about is site security. And I think that too can get overlooked because business owners don't necessarily educate themselves or know to educate themselves on security. And it's super painful to all of a sudden have a hacking or some malware and then have to go through like a site rehab. It's, you know, I really appreciate that part about your services. And I think you really have the client's best interest at heart.
Yeah. And I will tell you, it's because of a hard learned lesson, right? Like what, I won't say it's my very first client because, as many folks know, who have done the moonlighting route to entrepreneurship, you kind of have a smattering of those early clients where you're kind of figuring out, you might not even be charging. You're trying to figure out what your business is. But one of my very first legitimate clients lost her entire e-commerce site to a hacking. And we went to the hosting company and said, you know, okay, we need to restore a backup. And that was the situation where they were like, sorry, we don't have any. And right, this was almost 15 years ago. And so that moment on, I kind of swore up and down, like, I don't want clients to feel this way. I don't ever want to like watch. And of course it was a friend, but I don't want to watch my clients feel this frustration of all of that hard work just kind of poof, it was gone. And, you know, she's also trying to manage a brick and mortar store and all of that good stuff. So it was just really gut wrenching to see someone deal with that. And so that was kind of where, for better or worse, my love of security kind of came into play. And I like to equate it to insurance, right? It's not a fun topic to talk about, but for anyone that's had to kind of lean into insurance, whether it's health insurance or car insurance or whatever the case might be, you know that when you do need to lean into that, you're really grateful that you have it.
Yes. And I will say if anyone can make security sound sexy, it might be you.
Thank you. I've been trying for years.
So I've had the immense pleasure of working with you multiple times. And, you know, I'll just say one of the things I most appreciate about your work was your clear communication, your structured process, your detailed eye, and your adherence to deadlines. And not to knock the development industry, but those can be hard things to find. I've worked with more developers than I can count over the past decade of running my business. And I just want to ask you, like, how crucial do you feel like this kind of customer service is to Tiny Blue Orange?
Oh, well, first, thank you so much, Lauren. I will own the fact that I'm a human being and I've had my moments too, but at the end of the day, without customers, you don't have a business. And so that's kind of why Tiny Blue Orange and myself just really focus on, at the end of the day, you know, take care of your customers and not to be a doormat and not to work for pennies on the dollar, but take care of your customers. And so over the years, I've kind of come to these terms that I speak a different language than my customers, right? Most people don't know PHP. Most people don't know JavaScript. Some might learn, you know HTML or CSS from like back in the Angel Fire days or GeoCity sites, but they're kind of like, yeah, don't talk to me about those things. So there were definitely some hurdles and some learning curves that I went through of realizing that I was truly speaking a different language than my customers. And so to kind of speak to your point about clear communication, some of that means getting out of your own expertise and not using the jargon and not using the lingo that makes so much sense to you, but makes no sense to somebody who doesn't speak that language. So that's kind of helped with the communication piece. It puts customers at a little bit of peace of mind, right? If they feel like you're talking over them or they're lost when you're explaining stuff, that's not a good spot to be in when you end a meeting or a phone call or an email of any sort. It's better to kind of have everyone on the same page. And then I want to touch on the structured process. That's a big deal. When you are working on, as you know, Lauren, when you're working on something as big as a brand new website, if there's not a process or a structure in place, like that project can go off the rails and off the deep end so quickly. So kind of having those checkpoints, while every site is unique and special, having certain checkpoints along the way just kind of helps keep everyone on the same page. And it keeps customer, developer, designer, copywriter, all of those humans who are humans, if things deviate a little bit, it allows us to get back on track and keep everybody happy in the long term.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that you really shine at. And also where I see many web development projects go off the rails because the developer might have the technical skill set, but doesn't have the project management and process skill set that you have. And so they think they're just hired to build the website, and they are, but the client doesn't always know what they don't know. And so they ask for changes and they don't realize, well, that's a big change. That's not just a 15-minute change. That's like, we got to redo the whole thing. And so just like when you build a house, you know, without a blueprint, things go awry very quickly. It's very similar with websites. And so I don't know. I just really appreciate that you have all these, and soft skills is the wrong word, but soft skills in addition to the technical skill set that you do have.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if we didn't talk a heck of a lot about it, that's okay. Maybe we'll get there. I didn't start out as a developer. You know, I started out as a designer, and, you know, I love my developer friends, but you're right. There is kind of this trend. And I think, you know, the unfortunate truth around stereotypes, you know, they can be pretty harsh, but I think there can be some layer of, you know, truth to them. Is kind of that developers take the design, they take the content, they take all the pieces, and then they disappear, right? Like they go somewhere and magic happens and clients are like, hi, can I see something? And so I think that part where we're like, yeah, we're coding. Like you do not want to see it right now. It doesn't look good. I think that piece has been something that I've tried to work on throughout the years of, you know, keeping clients in touch, showing them progress without kind of giving them a link, because sometimes if you give them a link, all they'll see is what's not working. So kind of for those bigger projects, making sure that customers can kind of see some progress being made has been a really big help as well.
Totally. And I use construction analysis a lot when I speak about websites, because it's something people understand, but you can't just go to the site, the construction site, you know, and see all the framing, right? Websites are a lot more intangible. And so I agree that people understanding what's happening and what step you're at, even if it doesn't look beautiful yet, is really helpful to trusting that, hey, there's work being done, you know?
Yeah, I love the building and analogy. That's beautiful.
So, Allison, when people are redoing their site or building their site, there's so much that has to happen before web development can even start so that it runs smoothly and quickly and efficiently. Can you share with our listeners from your standpoint what those phases are and what is going to set up a web development project for success?
Yeah. And, you know, I like to talk about it, of course, if you're building a brand new website or redoing a site, but I think these project steps can kind of apply to a new phase or a new addition to your site. They just might look a little bit smaller in scale, right? So I think planning, you know, we talked about that. Planning is huge. And for me, it starts with asking yourself what the problem is, right? Where are the headaches? Where are the hurdles? Where are the frustrations? Where are the pain points? Because from there, you can solve the problem. If you're like, I just want something pretty, okay, that's not going to help the team, whether it's you, yourself, and that's it, or whether it's a team, that's not going to help get to the best end result. You'll still have some of those same headaches and those same hurdles. So to me, the planning phase is what are the problems and what would solve that? And then from there, I'm a big believer in content first, design second. Some of that will change and evolve between those two phases, but I, you know, my dad instilled this in me from a very young age, but form follows function. And so if you don't know what pages you need on your site, or you don't know how long your about page is, the design can get a little messy if you try to add content to it after the fact. So for me, it's content gathering, copywriting, images, that sort of thing. Then it's design. And then I come in with development. But, you know, for the developers and myself, I like to add in, it's really helpful to include us in the first phase, simply because, right, it's our job to know the technical bits. And so you might have folks in a room or on a call saying, okay, here are the pain points. And you might not have a clue how to solve them, right? Whereas the technical person, the developer, might be like, oh, super simple. We're going to automate with this. We're going to add this plugin, or, you know, whatever the case might be. And so bringing the developer on in the beginning, even if it's just like a touch point of here's what we're looking to do and they can chime in, it can be so beneficial to the project as a whole. And then kind of the same thing with design, just I like projects where we have a check-in with design before the client sees it. That's like ideal world scenario, because we can kind of present some things of like, you know, I would recommend this plugin, which has a very different layout, and customizing it to this design might be a little rowdier. It might be a little more problematic than it's worth. Or, hey, I noticed these small tweaks to the headlines throughout the page. Should they be consistent so that when the client makes a new page and they use that headline style, which headline style should it get? You know, just those little details to kind of make a nod to the detail comment you made earlier. Because yeah, development kind of is the caboose of the project, but it's nice to be included throughout, not to take over or be a project manager, but just to enhance the project along the way.
Yeah, and also to help keep the scope of the project on track, because you don't want to be building a plan for a Ferrari when, you know, the budget you have is for a Toyota, which is still a very nice car, right? Yep. But
so true. So true.
Especially if you're copywriter and or designer don't have a dev background. They don't always know, hey, we're asking you to build a Ferrari when we could accomplish the exact same thing in a different scope. So one thing I've seen throughout the years like you is, and I also believe in a content first approach, but that content if these phases aren't followed in the order you say, often gets saved for last. And then clients can expect to like, oh, well, the developer is just going to fill in the content. You know, we have this beautiful design, and then like, we'll just add in the content later. And it becomes such a, it's like putting the furniture in your house before you even have walls built. Like, you don't even know how much furniture you need, or what the space of the rooms is. It's a very expensive way to build a website. So when someone is working with you, do you have copywriters you recommend? If they don't have someone on their team, how do you go about that?
Yeah, I do. I will say very rarely does someone come to me without copy at this stage in the game, but that was definitely something I dealt with earlier in business. I think too, putting content at the very front just saves so much, because I've gone about it where I'm like, okay, I'll build you your site, you work on copy, right? Very beginning phases of my business. That was like, okay, client first, solve all of their problems. And then the site just sat there because content wasn't getting done. So I think, you know, sometimes folks maybe underestimate how long that content can take to create, or just the back and forth or the research involved. And so I think putting that content first is really helpful to a project timeline in general. But yeah, definitely I say hire the experts for that. There are some great copywriters out there that will specialize in the type of content that you need, which is really important. And, you know, I've worked with some folks who will write a couple pages and let the client take it as inspiration and go from there, or just, you know, literally draft the entire website, which is a great spot to work in, but not always the case when budget, you know, like you said, is more in the Toyota range.
Yeah. So I think that's super helpful advice for anyone listening. And to that point, when you overlook copy and you just focus on, I want a pretty website, you're not really thinking about what is the problem that I actually want to solve, because it's really easy to say, I want a pretty website. But when you dig a little deeper, the problem you're trying to solve is, how do I get more business from my site, which doesn't come from pretty alone.
No. Yeah, your site might get pinned on Pinterest, but is that going to bring you any business? Probably not.
Yeah. So, Allison, let's say someone's listening to this podcast and wondering, is my business ready for Tiny Blue Orange? When would you suggest that someone seek out your services, let's say to either redo their site or build a brand new site?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer this in a little bit of a roundabout way. So the number one question that I get asked in my business, which is better or worse, is what's with the name? It's not about WordPress. It's not about security. The number one question I get asked is what's with the name. And so I think this will answer the question. So blue was my favorite color. And when I started my business, I said, I want to complement the businesses that I work with, right? I don't want to roll up and be like, this is how I do things, you know, shake the systems up and, you know, be a bully. That's not my scene. That's not my style. So I picked blue and orange as complementary colors because of that nod to wanting to complement the businesses that I worked with. And then I picked the word tiny because I love things in threes, and I never had this big vision of being this corporation. You know, I knew it was always going to be a small team or just myself. So Tiny Blue Orange is kind of rooted in this idea of complimenting the folks that are hiring me. So to that point, I try to work with folks in a variety of budgets. Now, of course, there are going to be some folks that are, you know, brand new or doing the side hustle thing and don't have the budget to work with me. So I respect that. But, you know, we hit on hosting. That is a pretty low cost investment to work with Tiny Blue Orange to get your site hosted with somebody who cares about it and wants to make sure that it's fast and wants to make sure that hackers don't get access to it. From there, if we're talking about websites, you know, which is kind of what you hit on, I do websites in two ways. And my biggest piece of advice for anybody starting out in business, this might be shooting myself in the foot, but don't get a custom website. I don't know about you, Lauren. My business changed dramatically from what it looked like in 2012. I used to offer photography services. I used to do logo design. And having a more simple website allowed me to kind of flush that out and figure out exactly what it was that I was doing. So for those folks that are kind of in their first like 0 months to even like the 2 or 3 year mark, I say work with somebody on a brand and then take a theme that will allow you to put in your colors, your fonts, your vibe. And so Tiny Blue Orange can make those changes and make that work for you. And then from there, I say kind of that 3 year beyond is when you're ready for a custom build, because it is a time and a financial investment, but you're more settled in your business. You figured things out. You know who your audience is. You know the projects that light you up. You know the services that are working for you and working for your clients. And so really rooting the custom site in that. And also you figured out your pain points. So really getting those answered and figured out and flushed out with that custom project is a great spot to be in after a couple of years under your belt.
I 100,000% agree with you.
Yes.
Your website is a living, breathing thing. And speaking transparently, I had the ugliest website in the world, one page that I operated off of for 4 years, and I had a stellar business. And, you know, there were a lot of things that had to get fleshed out that were fluid before it made sense to do another iteration of the website. And I think if you spend all of your marketing funds and budget upfront on just the website, you're overlooking all the promotion that has to happen on the back end of that. And you don't, again, need a Ferrari up front. So how can you shortcut it? And I think that is with a template, get some branding in place, make it look really, really great and do what you need the site to do. But it's a way for you to stair step your investment in your website in a way that's going to grow with the business. And so I don't think that shoots you in the foot at all. I just think that steers clients in the right direction, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know about you, but I've seen it a ton where that first site, if they've spent a bunch of money, especially when that feels like all of the money that they had, and maybe that's true, or maybe that's not, but like, it feels like such an investment. It feels so precious to them and they don't want to move away from it. Even if it's like costing them time and clients and referrals and it's not working for them at all, they keep coming back to this, but I spent this much time or this much money or both on it, and it's really hard to grow from that. Whereas I think if you put something up that works and works well for you and your clients, you're not afraid to grow from it. You know, we don't want to necessarily have website shame, but this idea of, you know, yeah, this does the job and I'm going to improve on it in the next 2 years or whatever the case may be. That can be a really good spot to operate from, instead of treating something as so precious that you can't make changes to it.
That's great. So let's say someone's listening and they're like, I'm at that stage. I know you have some great options for them around, let's customize a theme that you have that already exists so that it's a more affordable entry point into creating a site.
Exactly. Because that's what we love about WordPress, right? Is these templates or these themes that allow us to build content upon content. So maybe we start out, like you said, you had a single page site. Like, I think that's brilliant for brand new businesses. Have a single page. And that way, if it is in Wix and Weebly, you're not painstakingly migrating dozens of pages out of that service into WordPress. And, you know, build upon it with these templates so you can then clone the page and add new content. And you have this great structure, or to nod back to the analogy we're using, this foundation, right? And you can take the template that gets updates from the developer and grow your business from there.
Yes. And just to show you how dated my site was, it was custom coded in HTML and CSS.
Yes.
By me.
We love to hear it. Love it.
You know, I think when you're new, you can think the website is going to be the make or break for whether you bring new business in, and it's totally not. Like, I found my first clients at friends' parties. I told everyone what I was doing and I got business that way. And no one asked me, well, let me go see your website, you know? So, you know, I think it's important to think about where am I at in my business? And then let me work with someone like Allison, who's really going to help me understand what kind of site I should be building based on where I'm at.
Yep. And true, like, honor your budget. Don't feel the need to spend more than feels comfortable to you, because all of it is solvable. It just might be that your budget is, let's install WordPress, let's use a theme from WordPress, and let's add in your 5 brand colors and your 2 fonts. And then you get to use tutorials on the internet to add content to it. That can be a very quick, very quick website, but get you set up with the right foundation. And then, you know, it can only expand from there.
Yes. So Allison, maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit more about your entrepreneurial journey. Like, what inspired you to start Tiny Blue Orange, and yes, when did that happen?
Yes. Oh my goodness. Lauren, I am going to try really hard not to cry, but I will admit that I'm tearing up. So my father was an entrepreneur my entire life. He started his own architecture firm before I was even an idea. And I grew up watching my dad do what he loved and live a life that he loved, taking months off to travel, picking up projects that he really felt passionate about. And I truly don't think that I ever had any other plan than to be my own business owner because of him. I just didn't know what the timeline looked like, and that was okay, right? It's a scary thing to be responsible for your own income. And so out of college, I did the moonlighting thing, but I got a career as a creative director and I was enjoying it. And I, you know, did some side hustles to add to the projects that I could do and not working with one specific brand that I was working to as my 9-to-5. And through a health scare, I basically slammed on the brakes and said, nope, this stress is not worth it, what it's doing to me. And I got a job where I did not have to take work home, where I could reduce my hours from 40 a week if I wanted to, and there was low pressure. And as I did that, as I healed, I started to ramp up my moonlighting, right? I started to ramp up that side hustle. And my boss was so sweet. So, you know, I cut my hours from 40 to 30. I cut my hours down to 25. I cut my hours down to 20. And then finally I went, no, it's time. And I put in my 5 weeks notice, because that's who I am. I'm like, I got to give her time. And I was a little scared. But yeah, I put in 5 weeks notice and I haven't looked back since. And it has been a journey, right? We can all attest to the fact that there are definitely some highs and some lows. But yeah, being my own business owner was probably in the cards from day one. Yeah, I've always had this drive to work for myself and to build that freedom as I define it.
That is such a inspiring story. So I really appreciate you sharing, and you're gonna make me cry. you know, I think what a gift too, that you were able to moonlight for a little bit while you, it can be scary to just jump cold turkey. That's what I did. Primarily because I was super burnt out, but creating your own paycheck that covers your income and benefits and taxes and all these things you didn't think about when, when you work for someone can be very scary. So having a transition, I think, can be super helpful, especially as you're building up a client base.
Yeah. And I totally, you know, I'm a numbers person. And so I set these goals of like, I want to be able to pay my car payment with my side hustle. And then once I hit that goal, I was like, oh, I want to pay rent with my side hustle. And as I kind of reached those different milestones, that was kind of the marker of like, is it time? Okay. Yep. Now it's time. I'm getting to that phase where I'm too busy again because I'm trying to hang on to a job where I have benefits. Now it's time for me to do the thing on my own. So yeah, that was just my approach, but I totally get the cold turkey version too, because I think had my health not been so much a big focus where medical bills were kind of front and center in my mind, I think that moment would have been when I started the business from, you know, that cold turkey phase. But yeah, I needed to get my health under control first.
Yeah. And speaking frankly, I left a corporate career in Belgium where my health insurance was 35 euros a year.
Yeah. Different story.
Yeah. I like, it was shocking when I moved back to the States and was like, oh shit, my health insurance is, you know, way more than that a month. And, so while I say I went cold turkey, but I had side hustles to make up for income. I was Spanish tutoring and I was catering on the side until my income was large enough to support going completely cold turkey. So I don't know if that makes sense, but it wasn't completely cold turkey, but I did leave a steady job and a steady paycheck.
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, we all have our story. We all have our journey. Like I actually, I don't love this phrase, but I am multi-passionate. And so I actually have a second job right now, not necessarily for the income, but for the time away from a screen that it gives me. So I actually have a boss that I report to a couple hours a week, but it's truly that idea of, I love what I do, but I also love face-to-face human interaction. And so being a yoga teacher is like something that gives me so much joy outside of doing websites every single day. So yeah, it's, you know, we each have our own story and we do the best that we can. And sometimes those, I don't even want to say like sidetracks. I think those things add to what we can offer and add to our learning and add to our uniqueness that our clients can all benefit from as well.
Absolutely. And by the way, what a great way to counteract all that sitting.
Right? Move the body around a little bit with no computer in front of me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, Allison, you've been doing this for a while. You've had Tiny Blue Orange for how many years now?
I need to look. I think I bought the domain officially in 2009.
Crazy.
Yeah. But my full-time run has been a decade now, officially.
That is an incredible milestone, first of all. Yeah. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yes.
So I imagine how you get in front of new business today looks a lot different than in the beginning. How do most of your clients find you right now?
Yeah. So definitely as somebody, if you're new in business listening to this, like don't get too frustrated. Cause I'm going to sit here and tell you that almost all of my clients are referral, word of mouth, repeat clients. That's really the decade of building up that client base, right? That's hundreds of websites with Tiny Blue Orange listed in the footer. That's, you know, agencies that I partner with who white label my services to their clients. It's those relationships that I've built up. But I kind of want to mention, because you said at the very beginning, you got business by talking to people. And I had this saying when I started my business, which was totally corny, but that's who I am, of ABC, always be carrying your business card. And I think that has changed a little bit with the pandemic, but honestly not, because, you know, there's a fine line between only talking about your business and not having an identity outside of your business, which is a tangent we could go on, that I think is really important to have an identity outside of being an entrepreneur. But there's a line, but letting people know what you do, there's nothing wrong with that. And you can get some clients in some of the strangest places. One of my very first clients that was a stranger, right? Because when we start moonlighting, we get our friends of friends or uncle or that sort of thing. My very first stranger client, I got at Home Depot in the checkout line. So that's where the always be carrying a business card came in, because I was like, I would never, if I didn't just start chatting with that individual and mention that I do websites, that would have never happened. So being able to talk about what you do is the oldest form of marketing there is. But something that I think even today I still benefit from. You know, I've had a couple yoga clients come up to me and ask about websites, because in my class, I'll say, okay, and for those of us that sit at a computer all day, this is something that's going to help counteract all of that. And that started the conversation of like, well, what do you do at a computer all day, Allison? Oh, I build websites for small businesses. Getting that elevator speech on point where you feel comfortable saying it. Those are all great ways to market. And then once you build up those relationships, being able to lean into those and say, you know, I loved working with you. Here's another thing that I could help with, you know, generating some more revenue for your business, or touching base with clients. This is something that I actually do is, you know, maybe it's the first year anniversary or maybe it's the second, but I keep a calendar called Anniversaries, and it is every single site that I've launched. On launch day, I create a recurring annual event, and I'll reach out to the client after a year or two and say, happy anniversary. Like, how cool. Your site has been live for this long. And sometimes it's just a simple like, oh, great to hear from you, Allison. And sometimes it's like, yeah, hey, guess what? I need something from you. Or, oh, I have this thing that I think you could help out with. So, you know, repeat clients are a lovely thing. But of course, you have to get some clients in your roster before you can have repeat clients. So just talking about what you do. That's my biggest advice.
Yeah. You know, I think if your friends and family don't know what you do, then it's very hard to reach out to strangers, right? So oftentimes we think like, oh, I got to find all these strangers who don't know me to become my customer. And there's often, for lack of a better phrase, lower hanging fruit, where there's friends and family who will refer you to people in their network because they care about your success and they want you to, they like you, they know you, they trust you, and they want you to help people that are looking for your help. So, you know, sometimes we think, oh, it's way too promotional to sell ourselves and say what we do. No, it's not. Like, it's your business. You have to sell your business. So, you know, find a way to talk about it in a way that's compelling and just do it.
Yeah. And I think the reminder that it might feel like you're always talking about it because you're the one doing the talking, but think about how many interactions humans have in a day. Think about how many times they're scrolling through their phone or watching a TV show. Like, you're not the only person that they're talking to, or they're not the only person in their feed, or you're not the only person in their inbox. So kind of reminding yourself that while it feels like you're being repetitive, in their eyes, it might be the first time that they notice you talking about what it is that you do.
Yes. And, you know, we just have to put aside sometimes our own feelings as business owners and do what the business needs for growth. And I agree that people aren't going to remember that you've talked about your business 20 times. They're going to think you talked about it once, right? So I just try, and I'm not a big like feely, hand-holdy person when it comes to that stuff. So I maybe am not the most understanding, but I just think if you're playing the long game with your business and you want it to be around, you want it to create an income and a lifestyle for you, then you'll have to find some way to be comfortable with promoting yourself. The other thing, besides the anniversaries, which I love, Allison, but that you do so well, is collecting testimonials from all of your clients and displaying them everywhere. And I think it's such a great way to get referrals without necessarily the client referring someone, if that makes sense. Like, it acts as social proof and people are like, wow, if Allison has 50 amazing testimonials, she must be awesome.
Yeah, no, I ask for it in follow up on projects. And sometimes it is hard to send that email. If a project didn't go as smoothly as I wanted, it can be easy to say, oh, I don't want feedback from this person. But that feedback can be very helpful and beneficial into understanding what went wrong, or that person might not have thought it went wrong at all. And you're over here kind of beating yourself up for nothing. So I send out surveys asking for information, asking, you know, just in general, how people thought the project went. And I also put a spot for testimonials. But the other thing that I do that I think is super, super simple, and I think everyone can totally steal this, I wasn't the first person to think of it, is anytime somebody sends you an email that has a compliment in it, flag it. So I have a Gmail filter or a tag or whatever they're calling it these days called stickers, right? So remember how cool you felt when you were a kid and you got stickers for doing something well. So that's kind of the approach that I've taken, is if a client sends an email that makes me feel that way, like I just got a really cool scratch and sniff sticker, I'm going to flag that and I might pull a testimonial from that. And, or I might just lean into it when I need a little confidence boost before a sales call or before a touch base call with a client, that that little boost can also help you as a business owner. But absolutely, the social proof, the verbiage that your client uses is different than how you describe your business. And as much as we try as business owners to speak like our clients or to hit on those pain points, our clients are going to do a better job of it than we will. And so letting those testimonials speak to your next client and let them see themselves in that, it can be so huge for your business.
Such great advice. And I love how simple that is for someone to implement. Like your form that you send clients afterwards is a very repeatable system. Doesn't take a lot of time. Sometimes it may feel a little painful if a project wasn't as smooth as you want, but it's just kind of a systematic approach where you're building up a library of feedback, a library of client language, and a library of testimonials.
Yep. So yeah, if you have your checklist, right? Okay, project ends, send invoice, send, you know, however you do things, simply add a item or a calendar reminder in X amount of time. You know, so for me, it's usually a couple months. I let clients kind of use their site and figure out like, oh yeah, this is amazing. Or, oh, this thing isn't working for me. But I like clients to kind of get some time on their site. And then I send out that email and that email has a link, the form. I don't have to recreate the form every time. The form exists, right? It's the same questions. And so I just send it out. And then when they fill it out, I get a notification. And now I have that testimonial. And now I have that feedback to take with me for future projects if I want to.
I love that. So Allison, you also have these two great features on your site that really help you know who's a interested prospect and how interested they are. So you have your contact form, which really asks a lot of questions about, you know, the project that someone's inquiring about, that I think is really great because it helps you know, like, what services are they interested in? What problem are they trying to solve? I think it really it does a lot more than your standard contact form, right? Name, email, and message. And so I just love that you do that. And it also helps the client, prospective client, feel like, oh, I'm in really good hands because Allison knows exactly what questions she should be asking me right now.
Yeah, the contact form, you know, we can get kind of dorky with some of our comments, but I think your website is an employee. That's how I treat my website. And so my contact form is that initial intake of, you know, does this person have the right budget or the right timeline or the right attitude, to be honest, to be a Tiny Blue Orange client? And so it also does some of the work that I might have to do on the back end. Of, you know, I'm still going to ask clients what their budget is, but my form is going to ask that so that I can get an idea of what clients are thinking. If somebody writes some exorbitant amount, I know they're not taking this seriously, or they're just truly trying to get a phone call with me, likely so they can just pick my brain. And in that case, I can handle some situations via email. So I just like, you know, it's not a lengthy form at all, but it does just a couple things to, you know, let me know the type of person that is filling it out. And the other thing that I say with the contact form is it gives me a chance to show off my personality. Like this is, I'm just such a nerdy human, but like the, what do I need to know? The little message in there is spill the beans, right? Like that's just who I am. Spill the beans. That's a phrase that I'm going to say. And so getting a couple more questions in there to get your clients understanding what you're like, it can be beneficial for you as well.
Love that. And they're the same questions you're going to ask every single client anyways. So why not take that off your plate and automate it a little bit?
Mm-hmm, definitely. And then like, I also ask how people heard about Tiny Blue Orange, right? Because then you get to know if it's a referral from a client, then you have an idea of what marketing methods are paying off.
Yes, 100%. You also stay in touch with clients and prospects with these amazing weekly emails that make security sound sexy, you know, is that something that is super time consuming for you? Or do you feel like you can rattle those off pretty quickly? I know it's an important part of your system, but I often hear business owners say like, oh my gosh, that's going to take too much time, or I don't see the value, et cetera, et cetera. And I just wanted you to share your experience a little bit about that.
Yeah. So kind of before the pandemic a little bit, but especially in the pandemic, I kind of took a step back and was like, okay, this like, no, I'm spread too thin. I don't like all of these things. And social media has been very difficult for me. It's very fun for me on a personal level. And this is just, you know, my own drama. But what I do is really not visual, right? Which is hard for some people to understand because I'm building websites and you look at websites and you use websites. But I am coding, right? Like I am typing code. And the end result is very much branded to my clients. And so being a brand nerd, I kind of was like, Instagram is really hard for me. And I have some ideas. I'm going to eventually dabble back into it. But social media was just really hard. And I built up this library over a decade of blogging where I had hundreds of blog posts. And I was just like, okay, yes, there's more that I can always say. But I was like, yeah, I don't always have the vibe to blog. I don't always, you know, I'll go through and I'll update old posts or make sure everything is relevant and new. But even blogging was kind of feeling like pulling teeth a little bit. So newsletters was kind of the thing where it's just like, once I ditched some of the newsletter size shame that I'm sure many entrepreneurs feel, and was like, no, I'm literally emailing people. Like I'm taking up space in their inbox. It doesn't matter how many people are on that list. These people have invited me into their inbox, which I like, my inbox is precious. So once I kind of approached it of that, it was more of like, oh, cool. We get to have conversations and I get to share nuggets with humans that will benefit from it. And to me, newsletters are very much a long game of folks getting comfortable with you, folks being constantly reminded that you exist. I think I sell in my emails maybe once a year, if that. Like truly, I don't, they're not for selling. And honestly, I think I'm even gravitating away from that selling feature. I will tell you. So when I do newsletters, I like doing series because I think some of the things that I really like talking about are a little bit too big for one email. So like I did a series on the Yoast SEO plugin because I think it is the best plugin for businesses who are using WordPress. It's like one of the plugins that I install. I'm not a fan of installing a lot of plugins. And so I wanted to do a series about how to use it because I saw people were installing it. People had it and they were like, what now? And that felt like way too much to cover in one email. I'm like, that email is not going to get read. It's going to get archived or deleted and everyone's going to move on and they're not going to benefit from it. So I created a series where every week I talked about a new point of the plugin. So then what I've done is when I do those series, I then wrap them up in a nice little bundle and I create an automation. And so folks that are now new to my list can sign up to learn about that specific thing. It's free. It's all good. But in that automation, I will often sneak in like, hey, as an FYI, I do hosting. As an FYI, I can help you set up your plugin. Just because if they're new to me, they might not have a clue as to what I do. They might have stumbled upon this automation series because they wanted to know about this plugin. So I'll put sales in that, but it's totally like just a casual mention. They can click the link if they want to and they can move along. But that's kind of the only way that I'm selling in my newsletters because, again, it's this idea of the long game. I think you've said that a couple of times already. Like people getting familiar with you and understanding what it's like and showing up consistently for them. And so that's how I viewed newsletters. But I think there have definitely been spots in my business where it did feel like too much. But when I reframed my opinion of them and thought about them in a different way, they flow very easily and naturally to me.
I think there's so much to learn from what you're doing. And I just want to say for any listeners, if you haven't listened to Justin Blackman's episode, go back and listen to it, because he shares some of the same pain points as Allison and said, you know, social media just really isn't my thing. He's a copywriter and newsletters are. I write. It's a really great way for me to stay in touch. But when he pulled back from social media, he said it had zero impact on his business. And so he was like, oh, great. Like, I don't have to feel the pressure of staying on social media for my business when it doesn't really drive clients my way.
Definitely. And I think too, depending on the business that you provide, I would imagine copywriting is similar. I'm not familiar with his rates, but you know, somebody isn't going to hire me and spend thousands of dollars with me based on one Instagram post.
No. Yeah.
That's a relationship that needs to be nurtured. And so, and yes, they might have found me on Instagram and that might lead to a longer term relationship. But I just feel like, you know, if your service is a higher price point, yeah, there are different ways to be connected with folks. And if Instagram is your scene or if TikTok is your jam, like have at it. There's nothing wrong with that. I think kind of the moral of my story is I found what flowed and I found what worked easily for me. And that's where I put my energy.
Love that. So Allison, as we leave our listeners with one piece of parting advice from you, if someone's earlier on than you and they're working on growing their business, they're working on marketing, what would you share with them?
One piece of advice. Such a good question. I kind of hearken this to the idea of like, what would you tell your younger self, right? Because hindsight is a beautiful thing and we can look back on how we've done things and go, I would have done that a little differently, right? And so I think that is how I would approach this question. And I would say, trust your gut. I think, you know, especially women or like estrogen dominant bodies kind of identify as needing to play small or needing to be people pleasers or needing to do what so-and-so over there is doing and not listening to your gut and not trusting your gut. And sometimes we need to make mistakes and we learn from that and that's great. But I think I wish I had a little bit more courage to trust my gut and to trust my instincts along the way. I think that would have served my business a little bit more, a little bit faster. You know, I got here. But whether that's in terms of what systems you use or what clients you say yes to or what prices you price your services at, kind of lean into your gut a little bit with that.
That is amazing advice. And I think so often it's easy to say, this guru or that expert or so-and-so told me to do this and ignore your gut. And sometimes you got to say, okay, I'll take that into consideration, but then ultimately I got to trust what my intuition is saying and what the data is showing me and be comfortable with the decision that I'm going to make and feel good about it.
Exactly. Because I'm sure you could find an article on the internet that told you needed to publish 3 times a day on 6 different social media platforms. And if just hearing that causes you to have like heart palpitations, that's not it. Like, don't do that. If creating that much content is like, yeah, it gets you excited, your eyes are wide and you can't wait, run for it. Like, do it. So yeah, trusting your gut a little bit. We could all stand to do a little bit more of it, I think.
Yes. So Allison, where can our listeners go to find you online and check out all your services and what you're doing?
Yeah. So tinyblueorange.com is the website that has the contact form that you can steal from. But also I do have Instagram at tinyblueorange. I'm usually more on the stories than I am in the posts, but if you want to hang out there. And then on the website, I have my weekly nerd alerts that you can sign up for. And that's anything WordPress related. So if you are a WordPress user, that is a space that you want to check out, because I send out tips every single Monday for plugins, for performance, for updates, for reminders to change your passwords, please and thank you, and how to store those passwords so you don't have to remember them all the time. Those sorts of things are what I'm emailing about.
amazing. And those links are in the show notes, so make sure to check those out. Thank you, Allison, for your time, for your expertise, and for being so generous in sharing your entrepreneurial journey.
Oh, Lauren, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Heck yeah. You just finished another episode of the Marketing That Generates podcast. I hope you found a few takeaways that you can put into action right away. If you want more on today's episode, head over to marketingthatgenerates.com for show notes, links, bonus resources, and related episodes. Plus, if you're looking to connect with other amazing business owners just like you, be sure to join my free community. You can get access at marketingthatgenerates.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll meet you back here next week.